Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
It's time to wake to sleep with Sleep Science Today, where we learn to sleep well with your host, Andrew Kolsky, on UK Health Radio.
Welcome back to Sleep Science Today. I'm your host, Andrew Kolsky. Today, we're going to be talking about nightmares and related disorders. We have Dr. Joanne Davis, who is a clinical psychologist that works with sleep disorders, and she even has a book, Treating Postpartum Nightmares. So, Dr. Davis, welcome to the show.
Thanks. It's actually Treating Post-Trauma Nightmares.
I'm sorry. Treating Post-Trauma Nightmares. So we'll get a chance to talk a little bit more about your book as we get into the show. But, you know, nightmares are something that obviously are very disturbing for people and make them very uncomfortable. And so I really want to be able to explore those today. And before we do that, let me just ask you, how did you get into treating nightmares?
This is a great story. So I was on my postdoctoral fellowship. And it really all came down to one client. So I was not interested in sleep or nightmares prior to that. I was a trauma specialist. And I was treating a young lady who had major depressive disorder, panic disorder, and trouble sleeping. And so we were able, and post-traumatic stress disorder. So we were able to do a treatment that was successful in helping the PTSD symptoms go down, the depression go down, the panic go down. And at the end of the treatment, she was doing pretty well, other than she was still having almost nightly nightmares, and very disturbing nightmares that would wake her up. She had a really hard time getting back to sleep. So I wasn't sure what to do to help her out. And I looked into the literature. And at that time, so this was the late 90s, at the time there was not a whole lot of literature out there, but I found a treatment called imagery rehearsal therapy. And I took that treatment approach and combined it with some techniques from cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia, because she was having a lot of sleep disruption, and utilized some borrowed from cognitive processing therapy as well. And so I put all of this together in a couple of sessions and tried it out, and it worked really well. So when I saw her a month later, she had no more nightmares.
So, wow.
Yeah. I was skeptical. But also intrigued and excited. So I moved to Oklahoma to start my job at the University of Tulsa and decided to see if there was anything to it. So I did a case series with four individuals over the course of a summer, and it worked really well. And then I wrote a grant, got some funding to do my first randomized clinical trial, and I've been assessing the efficacy of it ever since.
Oh, fantastic. So that raises a lot of questions then. So, you know, this particular client that you were talking about sounds like she had a lot of things going on, and you were successful initially in treating all of these different trauma-related disorders, it sounds like. And so what do you think was going on as to if all of the other pieces are responding to treatment, why still nightmares?
That's such a great question. It's absolutely fascinating. For what we have found out is that nightmares are predictors of developing post-traumatic stress disorder. And oftentimes, even with the great treatments we have out there for PTSD, when you're finished with that treatment, oftentimes it's the sleep problems, the insomnia problems, and the nightmares that are considered kind of sticky, and they stick around. So even despite being successfully treated for PTSD, you will oftentimes see that clients still have those sleep-related conditions that hang around. And what we have figured out over time is that for a lot of people, nightmares and insomnia symptoms aren't just part of PTSD. They are actually separate conditions along with PTSD. And so they need to be targeted independently.
Wow. Wow. So correct me if I'm wrong here, but PTSD, I'm assuming, probably hangs out around the midbrain. Is that right?
I think it's pretty complicated. Lots of different things going on there.
Oh, okay. But so when it comes to nightmares, do we know where those hang out in the brain, or is that also a much more complex answer?
I think that's much more complex. I know that we know that they happen primarily, but not totally or exclusively, in REM sleep. Mm-hmm. So during rapid eye movement sleep. And there seems to be some differences between trauma-related nightmares, so nightmares that start after experiencing a major, very stressful event, and then what are called idiopathic nightmares that don't seem to have an etiology, or maybe more of a heterogeneous etiology.
Mm-hmm. So I guess then this is a good time for us to talk about the actual definition of a nightmare, because, excuse me, you know, some people will say, wow, I had a really bad dream last night, right? And then other people will say they had a nightmare. What is the difference, if any, between nightmares and dreams and bad dreams? Can you kind of give us some definitional stuff to work with?
Absolutely. So we all have variations of dream experiences. So it's not uncommon to have what we call anxiety dreams. So dreams that are stressful in some way, but won't wake you up. So for me, I have almost every semester, the night before classes start, I will have an anxiety dream where I'm walking into the classroom and have not completed my syllabus, I'm not ready to teach the class, and so I wake up the next day remembering that dream. And probably still feeling a bit of that anxiety. So then we have bad dreams, which are more dysphoric and can cause a lot more distress. However, bad dreams don't wake you up. So again, there'll be dream experiences that you'll remember when you wake up just normally, but the dreams themselves do not wake you up. Okay. And then we have nightmares that are very disturbing. I think we tend to think about them as being fear-based, but they don't have to be fear-based. So they can include feelings of guilt or shame as well. Mm-hmm. But these are dreams that are going to be so disturbing that they do wake you up. And so you'll wake up, they're well-remembered, they produce a lot of distress in the moment and then into the next day as well. So we use the acronym DARK, DARK with a C, so that they're disturbing, you wake up from them awake, they're well-remembered, and they're causing clinically significant distress.
Wow. Okay. So let me try and process some of this. So if I had a disturbing, like, anxiety-related dream, I may be dreaming about some bad event or something, but it doesn't wake me. Mm-hmm. And if I had a nightmare, is it possible that I could be thinking about the same type of event that I had in my dream, but it's more severe or something to the point that it wakes me?
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. So there can be similar content. And that's actually one of the things that we find when we are doing the treatment for nightmares, which I know we'll talk about more in a bit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But one of the signs of progress is that people may still be having dream mentation about the same type of event, but mm-hmm. it's not so disturbing anymore that it wakes you up. And we can talk more about that.
Okay. So whether it be a bad dream, whether it be a nightmare, the content of the actual dream or nightmare, is that usually tied to some real event, or can it be something totally off the wall that we don't even know where it came from?
Yes, all of that. Yes, all of that. I think when we think about typical dreams, we tend to think of like the dreams with the bizarre timelines, you know, mm-hmm. and they may be related to actual things that are going on or tied to emotions that you experience. For example, you know, if you've had a stressful day, you might dream about, your dream might start with, you know, you're at work, you're walking down the hallway, and then all of a sudden you run into your third grade teacher, you know, and then there's your best friend and the dog that you had when you were a kid. So there's a lot of different kinds of images and experiences and storylines that can come together in a dream that don't really make sense. Mm-hmm. But in some way, I mean, the purpose of dreams is to help us to process experiences, to process emotions. And so what's happening is your brain is kind of connecting experiences you've had during the day with experiences from your long-term memory and connecting it on an emotional level.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask this question. I'm sure the answer is probably we don't know, but why? why would your brain do so many disjointed things?
Yeah, I think it's to help make meaning of things that you're experiencing during the day by being able to connect it with long-term memories. So it gives it like a space. It gives it like a home mm-hmm. in your brain. And the thing that we see with nightmares is that we think it's the brain trying to process a really distressing, really disturbing event that you've experienced. And there's no, it's like trying to make that connection. But what happens is that you wake up in the middle of the process, and so it doesn't get to complete. And so people who have nightmares, especially related to traumatic experiences, they get stuck in a loop. So mm-hmm. their brain is trying to help them to process the information about the trauma, just like it does during the day with intrusive thoughts and memories, and for some people, flashbacks. Like, it's trying to present this information to you so that you can work with it and recover from it. But in the daytime, we tend to engage in a lot of avoidance, which mm-hmm. maintains PTSD symptoms over time. And at night, we're waking up from the nightmare, so there's not that closure. There's not that complete processing that happens.
So then nightmares versus a bad dream, for example, are these things that I can expect to experience maybe, you know, okay, last night I had a really bad dream, but then that was it? Or is it something like I'm going to be haunted by this same bad dream or a nightmare? Like, is one different than the other? How does that work?
Yeah. So there are people who are more prone to idiopathic nightmares. There's some work that was done in the early 80s that suggests that people who are more artistic may be more sensitive to experiencing nightmares. But when it comes to trauma-related nightmares, those nightmares do tend to be quite similar and recurrent over time. So not always. I have seen people who have just a bunch of different types of nightmares that may be somewhat related to their trauma in terms of content or themes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then I have other people who have maybe one or two nightmares that recur over and over and over again.
Wow. Okay. All right. Well, then I'm going to throw out one more question, but then I'm going to jump to a break and we'll come back and answer it. And the question is this: if I am someone who is having sort of a recurring nightmare, if I did not receive any sort of treatment and I just sort of let it go, what could I expect to happen? But we'll come back from our break and we'll get the answer to that question from Dr. Joanne Davis. We'll see you soon on Sleep Science Today.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Okay, welcome back from our break on Sleep Science Today. I'm your host, Andrew Kolsky. We're talking with Dr. Joanne Davis about sleep and nightmares. So before the break, I had a question, which was, if a person has nightmares, and they are recurring nightmares, if they did nothing in terms of no treatment, what could they expect to happen?
Great. So what we find is that after a traumatic event, most people who have experienced a trauma will have some period of time in which they have nightmare experiences. And again, I think I mentioned earlier that those can be predictive of developing PTSD. Mm-hmm. For a lot of people, what happens is the nightmares tend to start to morph and change in the weeks following the traumatic event. So they go from being nightmares to more like bad dreams and then tend to go away. But there's a significant proportion of people for whom that doesn't happen, and they will continue to have the nightmares unless there's some sort of intervention. And for some people, that can be a treatment that targets post-traumatic stress disorder more broadly, and that can help. But even when that's successful, there's still going to be people for whom the nightmares do not go away. They do not dissipate. With the treatment. And so they need something very specific for the nightmares themselves.
So is there some sort of, you know, story out there, like a Guinness Book of Records or something, for someone who had the most repetitive nights of nightmares?
That I don't know. I can tell you, so my research lab, we do clinical trials treating people who have nightmares. And with our community participants, so by that I mean people who come in who have any kind of trauma, could be military, could be domestic violence, in sexual assault, motor vehicle accidents, natural disasters. We tend to see people who have had nightmares for a mean of about 16 to 18 years before
Holy cow.
They're coming into treatment.
Wow.
We did a trial with military veterans, and the average was 40 years that they had been having nightmares.
Every night?
Not necessarily every night. There are people who have them every night who have them multiple times per night. But we tend to see people who have them at least once a week.
Oh, so my gosh.
40 years at least once a week.
And would it be the same basic nightmare, or is it different ones?
It both. We have people who tend to have, a small cluster of nightmares. So maybe one, two, three different kinds of nightmares. We have mm-hmm. people who have all different kinds of nightmares with different storylines, but all very disturbing and upsetting. Most of the people that we treat can identify that there's one main worst nightmare. Kind of the big bad one that they're very terrified of having.
Wow.
And that's one of the things that that can make it challenging, is that one of the reasons that the sleep problems become so significant is because people are terrified to go to sleep. And
right.
So they will actively do things to try to avoid sleep, or to fall asleep very, very quickly so that they mm-hmm. don't have time to experience that fear of sleep and to worry about the fact, you know, about having another nightmare.
Wow. Wow. Okay. So just for my own clarification then, you know, we've made it clear that nightmares wake you up in the middle of the night, but some people can have a bad dream where they don't wake up. I want to get into treatments here, but the treatments that you use for nightmares, do those also work for people who have like the bad dreams, or are we in a different category at that point?
Yeah, I think that they can be somewhat helpful, but I've had people who have come to me with bad dream experiences or what they'll call weird dreams. Like I'm just having these bizarre dreams and I want to get rid of them. And I have found that the approach that I take is less helpful for those. What we do seems to really be able to target very well those intense nightmares.
Okay. Well, then let's talk about what it is that you actually do. What type of treatment is available for nightmares?
Sure. So there's a number of different treatment protocols currently being utilized. I am most familiar with imagery rehearsal therapy and the one that I developed, which is called exposure relaxation and rescripting therapy. We're working right now with a group that is has combined different treatment protocols and brought together a bunch of experts across the country who work with nightmares and sleep disorders. And we've come up with a consensus manual. So to try to simplify the research that's out there, because it's hard to know, you know, which treatments may be more helpful when they're all different or they use the same name, but under the same name, they have different protocols. So the approach that we take is basically it's psychoeducation, relaxation, sleep habit modification. We do a written exposure to the nightmare, and then we use a process that we call rescripting. So we have an individual create a different narrative for the nightmare.
Okay. So so this process, let me start by asking this. The treatment process itself that you just described, if somebody comes into you for treatment, about how much time would it take from beginning to the ending of the treatment?
About 5 sessions.
Oh,
so
5 okay.
sessions that are about 50, 60 minutes long.
My and that's like
protocol was 3 sessions, 3 90-minute sessions.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a lot.
Right.
So we kind of stretched it out a little bit. But yeah, we've been very successful doing the 5 session protocol. So just over a month.
Okay. And that, so it's like once a week, basically.
Once a week, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And is there homework in between?
Oh, yes. So, as with most cognitive behavioral approaches, there are practice assignments that we ask people to complete in between each session. And that's a big part of the treatment, too.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be really actively engaged and willing to do all of the different components for to be successful.
And in terms of success, in your experience with the work that you've done, is there a rough percentage of people that are successful and then some that have more trouble, or what's the breakdown?
Mm-hmm. So I would say that I think one of maybe the first RCT we did at the 1 month follow-up, I think we had 84% who had not had a nightmare the previous week. And again, these are people who have, when they came to us, they had nightmares at least once a week and oftentimes much more. It's not a panacea, you know, it doesn't work for absolutely everybody, but we have found that for the vast majority of people, they will experience a reduction in the frequency of the nightmares, in the intensity of the nightmares, and then usually a reduction in PTSD and depressive symptoms as well.
Wow. Okay. So just for more clarification again, for the treatment that you described, it sounds like there's no pills or medication, no invasive type of surgeries or anything. Am I getting that right?
You're getting that right. And we don't have a sleep clinic, so people are not coming and staying overnight. All of the treatment that we do is either virtual or in person, and it's like a regular therapy session.
Hmm. Okay. So if someone comes in and they go through the treatment regimen, and they are one of the few who don't respond, are there other options available to them?
So I would definitely think about potential comorbid conditions that could be playing a role. So it could be that there are other sleep disorders that may be also disrupting sleep, that is interfering with their ability to get better. They may have comorbid depression, anxiety, PTSD that also need to be addressed. So yeah, I would definitely look at any of the comorbid conditions. I know that there's been work on different kinds of medications for people who experience nightmares, the most prevalent one being prazosin, but there have been a lot of different findings in the research about how effective that is. So there are possibilities out there, but I think as with insomnia, with CBTI being a first-line treatment, I think I don't know that recommendation has been made for CBTN to be a first-line treatment, but it wouldn't surprise me if the guidelines came out that way.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so, excuse me, I think that, excuse me. Okay, so let me do some additional clarification here for a second. So we have a person who is experiencing some sleep problems. And let's say this person is having some insomnia. And they go to their primary care physician and they tell them, I'm having insomnia. In some cases, that primary care physician may prescribe some sort of a sleeping pill or something. Mm-hmm. They still are having more problems, and then eventually they may go to a sleep practice of MDs. So the MDs are going to be looking to diagnose their sleep problems. They have the ability to prescribe medications. They can do give a CPAP machine if someone has sleep apnea. So they have the medical interventions. And then there's people like yourself who are psychologists, and you don't prescribe medication or CPAP machines to people. You're working from a different perspective, non-medicinal perspective, right? Mm-hmm. And then that falls into the category of like behavioral sleep medicine. So there's a group of people who are the non-MDs who don't use the medication to address those issues. So if a person has a sleep problem, how do they know where to even go first or who to look for?
That's a great question. I think most people start with their general primary care physician. I think one of the problems that we come up against, though, is that while physicians may ask about sleep problems, they don't typically ask specifically about nightmares. And people who are experiencing nightmares often don't disclose that they're having nightmares unless directly asked, because so many people think, you know, this is something that happens to me at night when I'm asleep and there are no treatments for it. So we definitely have some barriers in terms of getting the word out there about the fact that, one, there are treatments available, and two, they are very efficacious. But yeah, I think most people will start with their primary care person, probably get recommended for a sleep study. And if the sleep clinics and the physicians know about, you know, experts in their area, they can recommend, make a referral to somebody who can do the nightmare work specifically. But there are not a whole lot of people who are trained in this right now. So yeah, definitely some walls that we need to work on breaking down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the whole I think you said it at the beginning, the whole area of sleep is still new, and we're really, you know, people are learning about the fact that there are treatments available for sleep and things that can be done. So, well, this is a great point for us to take our next break. And when we come back, I'd love to be able to learn more about your book, what led to that, what's in it, and maybe talk about some stories of cases you've dealt with. So you're listening to Sleep Science Today. We're talking to Dr. Joanne Davis. We will be back after this break.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
All right. Welcome back to Sleep Science Today. I'm your host, Andrew Kolsky. We're talking with Dr. Joanne Davis. We're talking about nightmares. And Dr. Davis, so you have taken all of your learnings and experience and you've written a book, correct?
Yes, I have.
Do you have a copy? You can kind of show us what it might look like?
Sure, absolutely.
Here we go. So treating post-trauma nightmares. And is this something available for like the layman, or is that written for other professionals?
It is written for clinicians, and the book outlines it was published in 2009, so probably needs to be updated. It reviews the literature on the nightmares, explaining the difference between idiopathic and trauma-related nightmares, and then walks through the treatment approach. So I've laid it all out there, and actually the three-session protocol is in the appendix of the book. So if people wanted to try that out, it's right there.
Wonderful, wonderful. So let me get you to clarify something for the audience here. So you've mentioned a couple times idiopathic nightmares. What are those compared to the run-of-the-mill nightmare?
So, idiopathic nightmares would be nightmares with no known cause or differentiated from a nightmare that begins after experiencing a traumatic event. So, most of us have nightmares every now and then, but we wouldn't, and they could be from stress, they can be from medications, they can be from an illness. There's just lots of different potential causes out there.
Okay, so if the difference is that an idiopathic nightmare is not coming from a stressful situation or something like that, can those nightmares continue on just like you were describing? That, you know, someone can have this theme that continues to repeat for them. Is it the same with those?
Yeah, they can definitely have similar themes across nightmares. In my experience, people who have idiopathic nightmares, again, they will have them occasionally, but it's not going to be the frequency with which we see the trauma-related nightmares.
I see. Okay. So now, also, I know that you've done work, as you said, with veterans and people who have had some pretty, you know, rough experiences and exposure to some things that are probably pretty shocking. In terms of the people who have nightmares, is it skewed more veterans have nightmares than other folks, or it's pretty much even across the board, or do we even have any data on that?
We don't have a lot of good data on that. I will tell you that when we did our study with military veterans, although all of them had military traumas, so things that happened while they were in the military, about 50% of them, the nightmares were about childhood abuse, not anything that happened in the military. Yeah.
Wow.
Which is really interesting.
Yeah, it's also sad. Yes. Okay, so then, so let's do this then. Let's talk a little bit about some of the actual types of cases and things. You shared with us at the beginning of the show one particular case that got you interested in dealing with nightmares. So now that you've been working with folks with nightmares, what would you say is one of the most interesting stories? And of course, we don't want to reveal any names or identities, but just the general story.
Sure. So one of the ones that sticks out to me was an individual who came into one of our research trials, was in her early 40s and had had an experience of asexual assault in her teen years and had been having weekly nightmares and usually more than just one a week for years since then. So going on, you know, 25, 30 years of experiencing these nightmares. And I was doing a group treatment at that point, because so this treatment can be done individually or in a group setting, and we were doing it in a group setting, and we had gotten to the point where she was writing out her nightmare, so doing that exposure piece, and the nightmare involved being chased through the woods and like just feeling this presence behind her. And it was absolutely terrifying for her, and she would wake up very upset, would oftentimes have difficulties even falling back to sleep at night after a nightmare. And so I gave the instructions to do the exposure, and then I usually give people about 10, 15 minutes to write out their nightmare. She had a hard time at the beginning, not wanting to, you know, to write it out and see it right in front of her. And then she wrote it out and just got this very quizzical look on her face and kind of sat back, and she was looking at what she wrote. And I had to wait until everybody else in the group finished. But as soon as they did, I was like, so I, you know, this is what I noticed when you've written out your nightmare. What was going on? And she said, I just can't believe that that's the nightmare. Like, this is the thing that has been haunting me for decades. Seeing, there was something about writing it out and seeing it on paper that just sucked the power right out of it. Like, yeah. So writing out the story and just seeing it in black and white, getting it out of that space in her head was so powerful for her that we still did the rest of the treatment and did the rescripting, the narrative. But I don't know that she actually needed that.
So are you saying that when she actually kind of looked at it on paper in front of her, it's like, oh, that's not so bad? Or like, oh, okay. Interesting.
Yep.
Wow. Yeah.
So, and that's one of the powerful points of the treatment. Like, I think there's a number of different things that maintain the nightmares over time. So the disruption in REM sleep, the anxiety and arousal the next day because you're thinking about the nightmare that you had, the anticipatory anxiety as you approach bedtime that, oh my gosh, I may have another nightmare, the maladaptive sleep habits that people develop to try to keep from falling asleep or trying to fall to sleep so quickly. All of those things are like the perpetuating factors, the things that my treatment will target. And I think that addressing any one of those is going to be helpful. So, like, not everybody would need the entire package of the treatment. But at this point, we don't know who would do best with, you know, this component versus this component.
Right.
And some people probably do need the full treatment protocol. But it's so interesting to see how different people change over time based on the different components.
Right. Wow. And, you know, if the whole thing is only 5 weeks anyway, it's really not that big of a time, you know, commitment. So let me ask you if you don't mind to clarify, when you talk about the rescripting part of the treatment, what does that actually mean? What does that look like?
Sure. So we first we have people identify what themes they see in their nightmare. And we draw these themes from Patty Riesick's work with cognitive processing therapy. So it's okay. Safety, trust, intimacy, esteem, and then power and control. So usually people can identify, this nightmare, I don't have any power in what's happening around me. I don't feel at all safe. Like, there are pretty clear themes that come up. And then we ask people to rewrite the narrative based on addressing those themes. Mm-hmm. So if somebody's feeling very powerless in the nightmare situation, we would have them rewrite it so that they take power in some way, and that they are an active agent in changing what happens in the nightmare. And then they will write it out just like they did the written exposure to the nightmare itself. They will write out a full description of the nightmare. It does have to be somewhat similar to the nightmare, so it can't be like a completely different story. Mm-hmm. And then we have people engage in imagery rehearsal of their description over the next week. So they are actively, like right before bed, imagining this new version of the nightmare. And interestingly, it's very unusual for somebody to end up dreaming the rescripted version. I had somebody... do we have time for one brief story?
Sure.
Okay. I had somebody who was a long-time victim of domestic violence, had left that situation, was haunted a decade later, continuously haunted by these ongoing nightmares about her husband showing up at her house and humiliating her and physically harming her. And so she wrote a rescription in which he showed up at the house, and she was able to kind of grab him by the shirt and toss him out the door, and said some pretty colorful things along the way. And so she was like taking back power in that rescription. And I saw her at the 6-month follow-up, and I said, "Hey, did you ever end up having that rescription, that dream that you rescripted?" And she said, "No, Dr. Davis, but I did do it." And I was like, "Did it?" And she had had a situation where her husband had showed up at a place where she was and was starting to give her a hard time, and she didn't take him by the shirt cuff and chuck him, but she did give him a piece of her mind and like very successfully shut him down.
Fantastic.
But people usually don't actually dream the rescription. It just seems to change whatever process is stuck in the brain in terms of trying to process that trauma. And it just allows the brain to kind of move on and to start to dream something different.
Oh, fantastic. Wow, that's really exciting. And it's good that, you know, if someone is listening to the show and you've been experiencing nightmares of your own, to know that there is treatment available to help you. And, you know, you don't have to be dealing with those on a regular basis. So in this case, I would encourage you heavily to seek out someone who does behavioral sleep medicine. A psychologist like Dr. Davis, who focuses on sleep, would be the right place for you. So, Dr. Davis, we are out of time, and I want to thank you for taking the time out of your day to share all this experience with us and explain what goes on with nightmares. So, thank you for your time. We encourage you to reach out, especially if you're in Oklahoma, to Dr. Davis. And we appreciate you all listening. This is Sleep Science Today. If you want to follow us on our newsletter, you can go to www.sleepsciencetoday.com. And that's where you can also find links to the radio show, the podcast, the YouTube channel, everything you might want to know about Sleep Science Today. We will see you on our upcoming episode.
Thank you for listening to Sleep Science Today and learning how to sleep better with your host, Andrew Kolsky, on UK Health Radio. For more information on how you can achieve better sleep, go to sleepsciencetoday.com. Remember, sleep science today and sleep better tonight. Thank you for listening to Sleep Science Today and learning how to sleep better with your host, Andrew Kolsky, on UK Health Radio. For more information on how you can achieve better sleep, go to sleepsciencetoday.com. Remember, sleep science today and sleep better tonight.